Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Keith Lockhart, music director of the Boston Pops and the Boston Pops Esplanade Orchestra. Welcome, Keith. It's been a while. It's a pleasure to speak to you again.
Likewise.
Actually, there's a lot of things happening for you, aren't there, for the Boston Pops?
Yeah, it's all good stuff.
Well, for those in our audience who don't know too much about your background, of course, they know your name, but tell them a little bit about how all this started. You worked with the Cincinnati Pops initially,
didn't you? I did, actually. Eric and I are very close friends and still keep in touch. I immediately before Boston, I was the associate conductor of the Cincinnati Symphony and the Cincinnati Pops, and therefore in a position to be seen by people looking for people who seem to have talent in the Pops genre. And when John announced, John Williams, that is my predecessor,
sure,
here, announced his retirement in 1992, they started casting a net, and fortunately I was one of the fish that was caught in it. And after a kind of a three-year-long courtship, I ended up assuming the position here in February of 1995, and I've been here ever since, so that's 14 years ago.
Well, obviously, they knew exactly what they were doing, but you had had all this background. I guess you weren't initially interested in conducting Pops concerts. Was that you were a pianist,
no,
aren't you?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that I was not interested in becoming a Pops conductor, and I'm still not really interested in becoming a Pops conductor,
well,
actually. I think that that's a very strange and unfortunate division that the classical music industry has made. The majority of the concerts that I do, in fact, all the concerts I do not with the Boston Pops are not Pops concerts. And I think training musicians to be versatile and be comfortable in a lot of different genres is a good goal for the industry, and not sectionalizing it off into, well, this is this kind of music and this is that kind of music.
Now, you just said that you do other concerts beside Pops concerts with the Boston. Is that right?
Yes.
What is that schedule like?
Well, it's fairly busy, all told. I only work with Boston about 20 weeks out of the year. And the rest of the time, I'm guest conducting. I've been the music director for the last decade of the Utah Symphony in Salt Lake, which is a 52-week full-time orchestra, one of the top 20 orchestras in the country from size point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been there 16 or 17 weeks a year and doing, you know, the normal traditional music director load there. I usually try to do an opera production a year. I've been doing a lot with Boston Lyric over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see, between those things and the guest conducting and my new job as the artistic director of the Brevard Music Center, which is an educational summer institution down in North Carolina that I'm an alumnus of, I try to keep out of trouble.
You also were initially a pianist, weren't you?
I'm trained as a pianist. I still play on occasion, though nowhere near as much as I did even a couple of years ago. Eventually, you run out of time to practice, and then you're so frustrated by the result that, of course, the result is you practice less.
Well, I think you're redeeming yourself all the way down the line. Now, there is something quite exciting, aside from this great concert that you're going to be doing here in Philadelphia. It's a tribute to Bernstein, isn't it?
Yes.
Evidently, there is a venture that you have just, is it completed? The first internet TV program online broadcast.
Yes, well, we did that over the course of this last season. We've always been, of course, in the Pops interested in mass media and where they're currently going, and somewhat of a pioneer. Of course, Fiedler, hugely in the early days of the recorded medium. He became the most recorded conductor pretty much of all time at the dawn of the Victrola, and saw it through the LP and stereo and everything else, and also along with Bernstein was one of the first conductors to have a regular presence on TV. But as we all know, the communication industry is changing mammothly.
Yes, and we're very much involved here at the station as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sure, because every radio station that has a chance of survival is exploring, you know, internet broadcast and that sort of thing. And with the Pops, we're noticing that so many people are getting their video content these days over the web as well, and not over traditional broadcast stations.
Absolutely.
So we last year recorded a CD called Oscar and Tony, which is a tribute to the great
awards,
music composed for, you know, both the Hollywood soundstage and the Broadway stage. And we did a internet TV show about the making of that, which was not only concert footage, but it was also behind the scenes in the recording session sort of things. And it did very well. And I think it's, it was definitely a trial balloon to further content being developed that way.
Now, you also, this Oscar and Tony that you recorded was a self-produced CD, right? In other words, did the Boston Symphony do
it? It was our third self-produced CD. We've been doing that for about the last 4 years now, basically realizing that the big recording companies have less and less to do with dissemination of product in these internet sort of days, and deciding that we would have more creative control and, frankly, be able to produce things more economically if we did not have a middleman. So
in other words, you have your own recording studio there that you do all this?
Everything has always been recorded in Symphony Hall in Boston, and it's just a matter of contracting with the recording engineers and the producers to do the product, but we serve as the people who get it to the manufacturer, who do the distribution, who do the PR, all of those things. And anybody who's interested in Boston Pops recordings, of course, can always go to bostonpops.org online, or to keithlockhart.com for that matter, and you can find a lot of the latest stuff.
So they can order it. This is exactly what's going on. It's quite a revolution in the music industry,
right.
And also for performers, and of course for symphony orchestras, it's a whole new way of living.
It's changing so much. I mean, it's hard to find a CD store anymore.
So much of the product is
available online, and even CDs themselves, because of internet downloads, are, you know, I don't know, in another decade, you know, the actually holding the medium in your hand may be a thing of the past. So.
You're right, because in a way, I mean, the computer has changed our lives, and of course, streaming on the internet, that's what the radio stations do, and you can hear it all over the planet.
Right.
So it's really amazing. But this was rather fascinating about the internet TV program. Is that like a YouTube type of thing? Or
It was actually, the link was available on our site, and I think there was a link to YouTube or some of the places that people passed through. But it was an hour-long produced, most...
Like a documentary.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. A lot of YouTube content is pretty much somebody holding up a camera. This was a real TV show with a director and everything, but it was designed not to be shown on broadcast television, but to be shown on the internet. And the good thing about it, and the interesting thing, it's kind of like the way DVDs have changed movie watching. There are all these layers of information that you can access. You can watch the program, or you can click on something and see background information, interviews, that sort of thing. And we did that with the internet TV too, and that's a whole thing that broadcast television doesn't allow you to do.
So this is produced first and then put onto the internet.
Yes.
In other words, you shoot it like you would a film.
Yes, it's a finished product.
It's a finished product, yeah. Now, about this wonderful concert that you're giving and about Leonard Bernstein, everything has been said, I guess, about Leonard Bernstein.
So we'll just let the music speak for itself, right?
Yeah, you of course, chose to do this, his 90th birthday it would have been, right?
I believe his birthday was, I think, maybe August 23rd or 22nd, so almost exactly 90 years from the time we'll be at the Kimmel Center.
And, of course, here we go again with the Pops and the classical. I mean, Bernstein's work is divided really very, very much. He was a Renaissance man, as far as I'm concerned. I think he was amazing. But, of course, you are doing the Broadway musical excerpts, right? And some of the film music on the waterfront, isn't that going to be one of the things you're going to be doing?
We are going to be doing music from on the waterfront. It's very difficult. Actually, you're right. I mean, Bernstein's material really cuts both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Across the spectrum, there's very, very serious symphonic statements that aren't particularly appropriate for the Pops venue. We can't do the Lamentations Symphony or something like that. But then there are, some of the most delightful and airy musicals with things like you know, on the town, wonderful town, and then some very, very serious statements that really bridge the gap, the American gap between, you know, the Broadway musical and opera, for that matter, with West Side Story and with Candide. So what we tried to do was come up with some of the more serious concert works to give us, our audience, a taste of that. And in the first half, we're doing some dances from the ballet Fancy Free, one of his
early works.
Right. It's 1944 with Jerome Robbins, and it was the same scenario that led to On the Town later that year. Actually, the whole three sailors with 24 hours on their hands to get in trouble. We're doing Bernstein's own symphonic suite from On the Waterfront, which is the only film score he wrote, which really is kind of the new American, over the 20th century, the new American crossover medium, and is, frankly, one of the greatest film scores ever produced by anybody.
What about Trouble in Tahiti? What happened to that? That was a wonderful work.
It is a wonderful work, and we actually thought about doing doing some excerpts from that, because we have singers, the singers who are joining us. It's kind of an ensemble show, because you can't really do a solo Bernstein show, because there aren't enough, you know, there aren't enough soprano solos, if you will.
Right,
you know. So it's a cast of five of our Tanglewood Music Center vocal fellows, who are young pros on the verge of big careers, fabulous voices and incredible energy, and the kind of youthfulness that most of these roles require, actually. And they're certainly capable of singing Trouble in Tahiti, and there are also, you know, other undiscovered gems. There's the whole divertimento and the arias and barcaroles, and there's the music, some of the music from Mass. But at the end, we decided that what we wanted to do on the second half was go a little bit more toward the familiar with music from Wonderful Town, On the Town, Candide, and West Side Story.
Well, maybe this discussion will decide for you to create another program of Bernstein, but doing some of the lesser known or lesser played works.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll do. Well, you know, we have the 100th in 10 years, so we can start.
Well, we can do this on and on and on. Now, so this then is the concert that will be on August 20th. Make Mine Bernstein. And then after that, are you still involved with the summer? Well, the summer's almost over, isn't
it? Oh, yeah. Don't tell me. It goes away faster and faster. Well, this that week is pretty much the conclusion of our activities. We have two more concerts after that. We are in Tanglewood on the 17th. Then we are in Wolf Trap on the 19th, in Philadelphia on the 20th. We are in Radio City Music Hall on the 21st, and Bethel Woods in the kind of between Woodstock and the Catskills on the 22nd, and then we're done for a couple of weeks. And the next thing we do actually is a media project, a DVD and PBS Pledge Drive concert with the jazz trumpet player Chris Botti, joined by Yo-Yo Ma and Sting, and quite an incredible list of luminaries. That's in the middle of September, so we'll keep busy.
So Pops, then, what is the season of the Pops? Is that throughout?
Well, no, the season of the Pops is really quite delineated. We do, we have basically our spring season, the traditional Boston Pops season, is from the second week of May through July 4th, 8-9 weeks. During that time, we perform just about every night in Symphony Hall. Mm. And then the rest of the summer is taken up with, you know, touring activities. And so far this year, we've been to the Cape and to Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard and various and sundry places like that, a couple times to Tanglewood. And then the next season, where we really reconstitute and play regularly, is the holiday season, which starts for us right after Thanksgiving and goes through to New Year's.
To the Christmas and the holiday and so on.
And then there are tours in between. This year, we tour to Florida in March for a couple of weeks, and the occasional things like the Christmas body situation.
Now for the audience, this is the Boston Pops Esplanade Orchestra, but this really, these are all players from the BSO, aren't they?
Well, actually, we have two Boston Pops orchestras. One's called the Boston Pops Orchestra, the other's called the Boston Pops Esplanade Orchestra, and the Boston Pops Esplanade Orchestra does not contain any members of the BSO, but it is a regular standing group that has played together pretty much for 35 years, and or the older ones at any rate, and is the orchestra that everybody in the country sees. It's the orchestra that plays the 4th of July.
But so what is the Then there's the Boston Symphony Orchestra.
There's the Boston Symphony Orchestra, who will still be at Tanglewood at the time that we're doing
this. Yes, of course. Well, Keith, it's just wonderful to talk to you, and obviously you are so very, very busy. The recordings, again, are they few and far between, or other than this one?
Well, you know, they're fewer and farther between than they used to be. Mm-hmm. The Oscar and Tony came out last year. This year, I think we're going to skip the holiday season and bring out a baseball album, which we recorded live, the first live recording of the Boston Pops that we've done in modern times. Fiedler did some in the 50s, but...
Are you going to wear a baseball suit on the cover?
Probably
I mean,
so.
Really,
yeah, something
no.
like that.
Yeah, we're aching to see you in that.
Yes, and as you know, I have to say, frankly, to your listeners, it may not be their favorite album because it's going to be a little Red Sox centric, you know, because that's
okay.
where we are. But with apologies and admiration for the Phillies,
always, and admiration for you certainly. A delight to speak with you again, and hope to see you when you come here.
Well, thanks. It's great
thanks,
to catch
Keith.
Up again.
Bye bye.